Hello, everybody. How are you doing today? I'm Karen Hartglass, and you know what you're listening to. It's all about food. It is all about food. Thank you for joining me. We are tuning in live today from the Progressive Radio Network studio in the greatest city in the world, Manhattan. And in addition to tuning in live today, we're tuning in love. I haven't said that in a while, but so important. That's what we like to do on this program, tune in love, because love is the only answer, in case you didn't know. But that also depends on what your question is. But I like to say love is the only answer. We have a wonderful program. I know it's going to be wonderful. I can feel it like it's already happened already, but it hasn't. But maybe when you're listening to it, this, it already has. But I always like to get into those thoughts about time. There is no time, by the way. All right. I'm Karen Hartglass, as I mentioned, and you can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com, and you can email me at info@realmeals.org. And thank all. I'm so grateful for all of you for listening, and to our new listeners with WGRN in Ohio, thanks for joining us out there. Okay, let's get to it. I have Neil Zacharias here with me in the studio, and today is the launch date of a new book called Eat for the Planet, Saving the World One Bite at a Time, which Neil co-authored with Gene Stone. We've had Gene on this program a number of times already. Gene, Neil, thank you for joining me here.
Thank you, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so what do you want to talk about?
Whatever. I'm ready to dive into the book and talk about food.
Good. These are very interesting times. Probably any time in your life is interesting, and that yours is generic, anyone's life. But we have all kinds of issues today with our politics in particular. I'm not particularly fond of the current federal government here in the United States, and there are other governments I'm not particularly fond of around the world. And we have a lot of corruption and a lot of problems in governments. But I like to think that as time goes on, we move forward and we make improvements and we make things more equitable for people and the planet. And I feel like we're moving backwards a little bit. And there's something that we can all do when we are frustrated and feeling like, other than screaming and raging on Facebook and Twitter, that we can do something really profound without changing any laws, and we can do it every day. Do you know what that is?
According to me, it is your food choices.
Food choices.
You make them three or more times a day, and it is where you can make the most positive impact and cut down the negative impact that you're having on the planet, on yourself, and on other beings.
It's so simple. It's beautiful. And the benefit is it's delicious. And I want to say that you can also look your very best. I know we live in a particularly vain society, unfortunately. But, Neil, I just want to say I saw you a few years ago, and you're a lot smaller. Do you want to tell us how that happened?
Well, it's an interesting place to start off with. But, I have gone through, and that's, I think it's good that you started off talking about politics and the state of our nation and our planet today. And I think we live in a world where everyone is very tribal, because we're more connected than we've ever been before, yet we seem to be more isolated than ever. We have access to the most amount of information, but yet we are all completely confused. And that's never more apparent than when we sit down to eat. Most people don't think about their own food choices. They don't think about what they're putting into their bodies. And that's just because we are too busy, as you said, arguing on Facebook or yelling on Twitter. And we don't tend to stop and ever question what we put on our plates and what we decide to consume and where we decide to spend our money. So my journey, to get back to your question, really, has been a pretty interesting one. I spent most of my life as a meat eater. I wasn't very conscious about most of my choices, even beyond food. And that kind of all changed around 8 years ago when I first learned about deforestation and the causes of deforestation. And I happened to be in South America on vacation eating copious amounts of grass-fed beef when I questioned why and how the beef was produced. And I ended up learning things that I didn't intend to learn, which is that a majority of the deforestation that's happening in the Amazon was connected to cattle ranching. And that most cows are fed soy and corn. I felt like I didn't know all these things. So it started a bit of a journey for me. I had a pretty established career. I was working, I used to be an attorney, and then I worked in digital media for several years. I had a pretty stable job, and you know, as stable as it can be in, in our economy. But I kind of went through this journey, came back from that trip, decided to change the way I ate. And about 6 months later, I learned enough. I read every book I could get my hands on, read every article, listened to whatever was out there about the subject, and decided I needed to change the way I eat. And the way I am, I tend to go, I don't like living in the gray when I can avoid
it. You're an all or nothing digital kind of.
I convinced myself that this was the right choice, and I couldn't somehow find excuses to do it halfway. So one day I woke up and I decided I was going to give it up, give all of it up. The long lead up to the answer to this question is really is because that was the beginning of a bit of a journey. 3 years later, I'm going to speed it up now. I started a company called One Green Planet with the goal of educating other people and informing them using all the tools and the tricks and the distracting creativity that's involved with online media creation that I'd learned from my years in the digital media industry, and create a platform which is onegreenplanet.org, where we spread these ideas, where I was trying to basically create content for other people who were like me, who were educated, informed, or at least consider themselves to be informed, but didn't know some very crucial facts about how the food that they were eating had arrived on that plate and what went behind it and what the impact was. So I started that, and I've then went through another journey where I spent about 3 years being focused on building that company, and was all plant-based, but then had to face new challenges in my journey to be plant-based. So I've gone through a process of learning where I realized that what is the right way to eat can be a very complicated question. And I found out that there are some basic rules that work for everyone, and then it's up to each one of us to apply those rules of eating, and then to also balance that out by having a pretty good lifestyle. What I mean by that is manage stress and sleep and be active and spend time in nature. And I found those to be all very helpful to me, and I'm going to answer your question now. I think I went through a journey where I had to unlearn my way of eating. Then I started eating plant-based, and I kind of had to relearn how to do that right. And as a result of that, I went through ups and downs in my own health, and I'm currently lucky and happy to say that I think gathered enough knowledge where I am at a point where I've never been healthier, happier, and more informed, and hopefully can help others who have thousands of questions around this way of eating or about changing the way that they eat.
Well, you look fabulous, darling. Fabulous.
Oh, thank you very much. You're very kind.
Yeah. Vegans, a lot of vegans are kind. Not all of us are kind, but I try to be kind. We had a whole show recently about being kind. Right? Do you remember that, folks? So I know some of you were like, what? What? One Green Planet? I know you caught that, right? This is Neil Zacharias, the co-founder of One Green Planet. I know you've been there because it is the leading independent media company focused on food sustainability. Yeah, that's right. That's who's here today. Okay. Woo!
Thank you.
So you said when you first discovered this whole concept of who was on your plate that you read everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you didn't read everything. But
not really,
because it's a journey.
Yeah.
And there are things that you don't even realize you're not thinking about until another door opens. It leads you to many, many different doors and different ways of thinking. As I mentioned, I've been doing, well, I became vegetarian about 45 years ago and vegan 30 years ago. I'm going to be 60 this year. Woo!
Wow.
And I can't believe I just said that. It's like unbelievable. But I'm constantly learning new things, and I've continually been on this path. But for me, and I don't know about you, but for me, it was all about not killing animals, not causing pain and suffering. That's what happened for me. And then the discovery just kind of expanded bigger and bigger. And, you know, as we get older, we want to feel good. I think we care more about health. And I just keep discovering that this whole foods, plant-based, vegan thing is the best. It's just the best, everybody. And it's also delicious. So you mentioned that we don't know what we're eating. And I have mixed feelings about that. I think a lot of people know who they are eating and just don't want to admit it. I've got all kinds of thoughts about what's going on in the human psyche. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're a messed up kind of species to do the things that we do. And in some ways, unfortunately, I think a lot of people have some sort of self-loathing and acknowledge a lot of what's going on, but just keep perpetuating it. It's really a difficult kind of cycle. But anyway, once you acknowledge it and face it mm-hmm. and want to do something about it, that takes a lot of courage, by the way. So you had a lot of courage. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, most people are well-meaning and want to make the right choices.
Yep.
It's just that, you know, I've learned that food can be very complicated for people. And, you know, firstly, I said people don't think twice about what they're eating, or they don't want to think about it when they do learn some
facts. You know,
but
how often do you hear them say, oh, I shouldn't be eating this?
Yeah, exactly. Because we are, and that goes for a lot of our life choices. I mean, we can have a separate conversation about that. But a lot of people are not just, you know, self-aware about what they choose to do and what they choose to think about at any given moment. And it's a sort of a result of our a very busy, over-communicated, over-connected, access to way too much information, overstimulated lifestyles where we are all just trying to get by. And food tends to be this afterthought, or and when it's not an afterthought, it's usually a celebration. And in both those cases, it becomes easy. And I'm no neuroscientist, but I think the way people rationalize this, at least the way I did, is when I started to think about it, I would always look for the excuse first. And so if you tell me, you know, I need to save the environment, and because of that, I'm going to turn off the faucet and have shorter showers. But along comes a book, Eat for the Planet being one of them, that explains to you that, you know, on a daily basis, we as individuals use about, 60 to 100 gallons of water with all our indoor activities. That's everything you would ever do in washing your dishes, laundry, brushing your teeth, showering, everything. But if you choose to eat a hamburger, you choose to eat meat or dairy, and especially meat and dairy that is part of our factory farming system, which is 99% of all meat and dairy and eggs in this country, you are essentially consuming thousands and thousands of gallons of water. Now, suddenly, that piece of meat or that burger on your plate has this added burden of that fact that I just gave you. You think you're a well-meaning person. You think you're trying to make all the right choices, and you've been taking shorter showers and yelling at people for wasting water. But now you're confronted with this new idea that perhaps the most amount of water that you're wasting is actually hidden in your diet. Unfortunately, majority of people are able to think past that and continue eating. And they will find any excuse to do that. And everything being, this is just how food is produced. And, well, someone else probably needs to solve that problem. And I'm hungry, or I am stressed out and I'm tired. I work too much. Whatever the reason may be. And then we pick up that burger. Oh, most people pick up that burger and don't think twice about it. And I think that's definitely a much deeper conversation about the human mindset and how it works. But the strange part is we live in an age where there's no shortage of facts out there about this stuff. Knowledge exists. Knowledge has existed. In fact, a lot of the knowledge that I've I put down into this book along with Gene Stone, my co-author, has existed for years and years and years. Some of these research reports that first highlighted this connection came out in 2009. And there's been books that were written 20, 30 years ago that talked about this problem.
Yep.
But yet, everyone seems to be walking around completely oblivious to this issue. And we seem to be talking about electric cars and saving and recycling and conserving energy in other ways. Not that those things don't make an impact. They all help. But, you know, the elephant in the room here is the fact that we are supporting, with every food choice we make that involves meat, dairy, and eggs that comes from our factory farming system, which, as I said, is the majority of it, we are essentially making the worst possible choice for the planet. And it extends beyond that. Some people may think, you know, I ask most people, do you care about clean air and do you care about clean water? Most people, especially Americans, would say we do care about clean air. We do care about clean water. You ask them, do you care about having healthy, nutritious food for yourself and your family? Most people would say, yes, of course I do. And you ask them if they have kids, do you want your kids to live long, healthy lives? They all would say, yes, of course I want my kids to live long, healthy lives. I'm a great parent. And then you point out, do you ever stop to think how much of your food choices are causing those problems that we've highlighted above, are getting in the way of our ability to produce food as our population continues to grow? And most people will say they have no idea whatsoever. And that's really the unfortunate state that we're in today and how we got here. I mean, we can, there's many, many, many reasons, but I'm happy to dive deep into some of that too.
You're reminding me of a talk I gave a few years ago. I use the exact same language. It's kind of giving me chills, but maybe it's like the universe trying to send a certain message out and we're the vehicles. But I was asked to participate on a panel to talk about animal agriculture's impact on climate change. And it was started by a woman who owned a feedlot in Nevada, small feedlot, and she was having a bull sale, and she liked to have an educational event before the bull sale. And people who've listened to this show know where I'm going with this. But I asked her why she invited me, and she said, I reached out to many vegans, and they either didn't respond or they came back with some really nasty responses. And I'm like, yeah, I want to be there. And so what I want to talk to you with respect to this book is how you were able to select the information you wanted to put in this book. Because when I did this talk, we were told we were going to have 20 minutes and then we were going to have a debate. And I read for months all kinds of deep science. I have a science background and I was like reading the calculus calculations for global warming and all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, how do I filter all this down to get the point across? And when I introduced myself, they knew I was vegan. But the first thing I said to these 250 cattle producers were, we all want clean air to breathe. We all want clean water to drink. We all want healthy food for our children and our children's children and our families. We all want the same things. And that, you know, that got us all together as a community. How do we solve this together? Because we all want the same basic things.
Yeah. And, you know, most people don't stop to think about how we even got here, because we can argue, everyone can have a debate about the subject. I'm sure everyone has an opinion about food. Even within the plant-based food world, there's a lot of opinions that sometimes contradict each other. But, you know, and we kind of point that out right in the beginning of the book, and I thought it was important to do that, is to provide some context around how we even got here. And it's and some historical context in the sense of this isn't because of evil corporations necessarily. Let's explain what's really happening here. And the way the two things I noticed that have led us in all my years of writing about this issue, covering it on One Green Planet, thinking about why more people are not seeing these connections and understanding the existential threat that we faced as humanity. And it, again, has nothing to do with being an environmentalist. You may not even identify with that word. It doesn't matter. If you really want a future for your kids, or if you want a healthy, food system, say 30 years down the line, we need to start changing the way we eat today because there's two reasons for that. So if you don't mind, I can maybe go a little bit into that.
All the time you want.
So the two reasons I noticed is that the two forces that have gotten us to the point where we are right now and where we're all confused and fighting each other is one factor being the rise of technology and the other being the rise of population. If you look at the Earth has been around for 4.5 or 6 billion years. Humans have been on this planet for 200,000 years. And for those first 200,000 years or so, things were fairly okay on this planet. We were living in balance with nature to a certain extent. And that drastically changed only in the last 200 years. And if you look at what happened in the last 200 years, it's very interesting. We went from a population of 1 billion in the first 200. We took 200,000 years to get to 1 billion and then jumped to 7 billion in the next 200 years alone. And also in that 200-year period, we had the Industrial Revolution. And we went from hand-driven methods of extracting natural resources to machine-driven methods. And that happened across all kinds of industries. It happened in textile manufacturing, it happened in coal, and undoubtedly it happened in agriculture. So, you know, I give this example a lot because I think it helps people understand why it is that this is an existential threat. It is because in the past, you would have fire and axes to chop down forests. Now we have forest eliminating machines. You had a fisherman and his boat. And some people still like to cling on to that
romantic notion
when the reality of majority of fishing today is multi-million dollar shipping vessels that are equipped with military sonar technology that can pinpoint the exact location of where fish are in the oceans and then destroy those ecosystems. So you're taking the fish and taking all kinds of other species, destroying the coral reefs as a result of that as well. And then comes, you know, farming on land. You know, we have this romantic notion of a farmer and his idyllic farm and a butcher with his blade. We've gone from that to now mechanized deboning, butchering, milking of animals at scale. And we did that because we had to feed this rising population and we had to do it in a manner that was scalable and was going to make those end products cheap so we could feed the world. So here we find ourselves now in 2018, where 7.5 billion people on the planet. Meat production has increased, I think, fivefold or something in the last 50 years or so. And it's rising in the developing world. I grew up in India. People there are eating way more meat than they've ever eaten before. And in America, well, yes, there are some positive signs. We're shifting in another direction. Back to the confusion that exists in the media space today, most people, at the end of the day, are confused what the simple solution is. And the reason we need a simple solution is because today we are extracting resources from our planet far faster than those resources are capable of replenishing themselves. And if you continue at the rate we're continuing, if we all go about putting on our blinders, eating that hamburger, thinking you're saving the world by taking a shorter shower and not confronting your food choices, we are going to end up in a place 30 years from now, in the year 2050, when we have 9.8, nearly 10 billion people on this planet. And we're going to be in a state where we have decimated our planet's life support systems, our oceans, our freshwater, our land, our forests. And if going back to that question we ask people, if you care about clean air, you care about clean water, and you care about your kids, the choices we are making today are going to impact generations to come. And I think, you know, we are lucky in some ways to be in this generation because I think we are the ones that have the last chance to make a difference. So while it is pretty pessimistic, if you look ahead, and when we started, you know, Gene and I started working on this book, you know, we looked at all the facts and all the knowledge, all the scientific research, and we couldn't help but be kind of depressed about the whole thing.
Yeah, very easy.
But the point I'm trying to make here is that as depressing as it may sound, and as scary as that end scenario may be in 2050, and if you read the book, we talk about all kinds of doomsday scenarios. the beauty of all of this is, and you mentioned it earlier, is that the solution is so simple and increasingly becoming so convenient, is becoming affordable, and most importantly, is becoming delicious. So when you think about that, and then you shift your attention away from the current madness that's happening in terms of our overconsumption in general and our lack of consciousness when it comes to food, and you start thinking about, okay, what is the solution? How can we point people to that solution? You realize there is an incredible list of reasons to be hopeful. And I think that's what makes us most excited about this book being out at this time, is because we want it to be a wake-up call for everyone, no matter which food tribe you think you belong to. And I know even the sustainable food world has all kinds of food tribes. Everyone thinks they're eating sustainable and they may be able to buy local and they know their farmer. And I applaud people who do the best that they can, no matter what those choices are. But again, we're talking about feeding the world. What is the choice that can work for everyone? Not just that person sitting in Marin County who can afford to buy a certain type of animal protein that is perhaps more sustainable than that's the one that's conventionally made, if they don't care about the animal welfare issues and that and the other downstream problems that are also connected to our own health. We don't need to get into that. But if you talk about the world and you talk about how do we get everyone, no matter what socioeconomic background, what color, what race, where you live in the planet, where you live in this country, what is the solution that we can give them that is not only the best choice for them, but also the best choice for future generations of their families, and of course for the planet. So I always say, you don't have to be a tree hugger. You don't necessarily have to love the rivers. I don't know why you wouldn't. And you don't have to love the forest. I don't know why you wouldn't, because you just have to spend some time in nature and realize that we are pretty blessed to live in this planet that's still sustaining life. But it is hanging by a thread. And we are the last generation that can make a difference. So think about that the next time someone tells you, well, I don't want to think about what's on my plate. And then I would say don't spend that much time talking about the problem, because, you know, they're probably going to tell you to be quiet. Mm-hmm. Shift to the solution and then talk about that. And I'm happy to explain that as well.
Okay. So your book, Eat for the Planet, came out today, released today. This is very exciting. I want to know, it's a small book. It's in large print. And it has lots of pictures. Now, who is this book for?
Excellent question. This book first and foremost, for a range of people. Most importantly, it's for people who don't get this connection, who don't understand how the food choices they're making are putting the entire planetary ecosystem in peril, and also endangering their own lives and lives of their family and future generations. And it was specifically all the things you pointed out. I'm glad you noticed all that. It was done to reach people, a lot of younger people who typically don't read books. And that's unfortunate, because we live in an age where people spend more time scrolling on their smartphones through Instagram and other social media feeds and make decisions about what to read and what to share and what to comment on and argue about in a matter of seconds. And I'm acutely aware of that. We work in the digital media space. We know attention spans are shrinking and the amount of information we're consuming, it just seems to increase and increase. So our goal was, how do you take a very complicated scientific topic that typically tends to be very dry, mm-hmm. and create a book? And I think books are still important. And I think books still make an impact in a way that a fleeting social media post or an article on the internet, and I'm saying that as someone who has, in the last few years, built a platform that does just that. it does not have that long-standing impact that a book can have. So we wanted to take all the best ideas that I learned about the issue and this and subject matter, as well as about how people consume media in this day and age, and what Gene has learned about how to work with publishers and craft a book that is going to appeal to people. And we wanted to create something that was very different. I almost call it the book for the social media age. You'll also notice the Eat for the Planet, everywhere it's mentioned in the book, is in hashtag form, because that was, in fact, how we initially started promoting this idea, is we think that the book is just a launching pad, and it's ideally designed to reach people who quickly, in a matter of hours, can go through it and understand why it is that we need to shift the way we eat and why it is that we should support this emerging plant-based food industry, and how we all can make a difference when we eat. And it, you know, we, some of us may decide to go all the way like I did and that you, like you have and many others have, but others can also be part of the movement because it's becoming increasingly easy. So, yes, the book is designed for people who don't get it. It is also designed for a lot of vegans, activists, sustainability-focused people, as well as environmentalists who are frustrated at the fact that their friends and their family don't get it as well. So even if you think you know all that is in this book and you're convinced and you've been eating this way and are plant-powered and plant-based or vegan or whatever you choose to call yourself, you can buy this for a friend or at least tell someone about it. The book is intended to be in this very friendly-looking package. The size, it's a very small book. It fits. You can almost put it in your jacket pocket and walk around with it. And it was intentionally designed to be in that way because I think people need access to hard-hitting information without dumbing it down, without sugarcoating, and without soft-peddling, but in a manner that will get it across to them and will make them stop and think and do something. That's what we hope this book does.
Okay. I was thinking stocking stuffer, but it's not Christmas time. So the holidays that are coming up in our Judeo-Christian world, for those of you who participate, I have to make my disclaimer that I was raised Jewish, but I am not a religious person, and I'm spiritual, but I'm not a believer in anything except being vegan. And I'm thinking this book could go on inside an Easter basket covered with chocolate eggs. And at the bottom is this little treat that everyone can, like, dial in and read a few pages. Or for those who are having Passover Seders and are reading the story about the Passover, some sections in here could be included in your little service. That would really add to it.
I totally agree. And I think at the end of the day, the book is designed for you to even browse through it, where you, if you don't want to read it from the start to finish, you can jump into a specific chapter. We have 7 different chapters that cover 7 different issues connected with factory farming and the environment. And each chapter ends with a particular doomsday scenario if we continue being oblivious about our food choices, and then prevents the opposite of that, which is the hopeful scenario if we change the way we eat. And then the last chapter outlines what we think is sort of, you know, the way we talk about this is often that we are on this path towards this disaster in the year 2050 when we're almost 10 billion people on this planet. So we need to get off that path, and we kind of use that as a way to describe the story of the book. Get off that path and get on one that is more environmentally friendly and better for us and better for the planet. And that is described in the final chapter, which is aptly titled The Eat for the Planet Way.
It ain't over until it's over. When you were talking about technology and population, I was thinking about when I first had that awareness about the technological impact on our society and where we are today. And that's when I read Diet for New America by my friend John Robbins, which came out in 1987, a long time ago, 31 years ago. And he was the first in my world who connected the impact of our food choices with health, environment, and the treatment of animals. And I'll never forget reading when he was talking about the aquifers. Now, aquifers are big bodies of water underground. Many of them were formed in the ice ages, and it took a long, long time to get this huge quantity of fresh water underground. You talk about how little fresh water we have on this planet, actually. And in the book, he talked about how high-powered diesel pumps were being used in the middle America in the farmlands to be able to grow primarily food to feed animals, to feed people. And this was the area that had been in the, what did they call it when it was a drought? It's escaping me. There was a phrase I'm thinking of. Well, this area is prone to drought, but now, like in Texas and a variety of other places, because they're sucking out all this water from the aquifers, and a lot of them are emptying, at least in certain areas, and once that water's gone, it's gone. That's the impact of technology. It just speeds up everything without doing anything in balance. So that's what I remember. And just speaking of John Robbins and his book, Diet for New America, one of the themes in his book that he has continued to this day is whereas I would love everybody to go vegan, he put out that the most impact we can make is if everyone eats less meat. If we move the bar over, the average over, that'll make the most profound difference.
Well, that is still true to a certain extent. And I think there's more happening now that makes that shift away from a meat and dairy and egg-heavy diet to one that is more plant-based. And I think a lot of people are finding themselves sort of unintentionally in that journey. And that's the interesting place we find ourselves now in 2018. So I know we've been talking a lot of doom and gloom, and I can do more of that, but you know, what's the point in that?
Let's go to the light.
Let's go to the light. I think one of the key things people don't realize in the last few years has been happening is that as confused as people may be about food, and as slow as the general population may seem to be in terms of understanding how a plant-based diet can completely transform this planet and your health, there are signs that people are shifting without even realizing it, or in some cases making a conscious choice to shift. So some of the things that people don't get is that about 60% of Americans say that they're cutting back on meat, and about 17% of them claim that they are now eating a predominantly plant-based diet. And what's interesting is also that we've had several new food companies emerge in the last several years that are offering products that are making it easier and easier for people to make certain replacements in their diet that don't happen to be meat, that happen to be plant-based versions of it. So the way I kind of, and we laid out in the final chapter of the book, is we recommend sort of a three-step process. The first being the one you just pointed out about what John Robbins said is you moderate your consumption. You cut down. The first thing you have to do is stop. Stop somehow, whether it is once a day, once a week. Leave your favorite meat dishes to your favorite occasions and for celebrations. However you want to stop, you choose stop and moderate some of that consumption, because that is going to make a difference. The second step is more interesting. It is replace. And I think this is what we couldn't have said many years ago, because there weren't a plethora of products out there. What most people will start to understand now is that the plant-based food category is one of the fastest growing categories in the grocery sector. It grew 8.1% in the past year as compared to everything else in the grocery store. So people are choosing more plant-based options. So what's ended up happening is that people may not consider themselves to be vegetarian, vegan, or plant-based, or even, you know, there's so many terms for it now, flexitarian. But then when they walk into a grocery store and they're looking to buy cheese, or they're looking to buy mayo, or they're looking to buy butter, or they're looking to buy some snacks, or they're looking to buy a coffee creamer or some milk to put in their cereal, they're increasingly choosing the plant-based option. And the reason for that is that the plant-based options are finally starting to compete with the animal ones on price, on taste, and availability. So that explains the rapid rise of dairy-free milks. Almond milk sales have gone up 250% or something in the last 5 years. Plant-based milks now comprise about 10% of the milk sector, and dairy-free milks have been growing year over year while sales of liquid milk are declining.
Thank you.
So that's a positive sign. And are all those people who are making those choices identifying themselves as vegan or vegetarian or plant-based? Highly unlikely. Some of them, of course, are, but a majority of them aren't. And then on the plant-based protein sector, when you talk about plant-based meats, we have about 36% of consumers in America that are choosing to eat plant-based meats. And it turns out that 70% of those that are choosing to eat, whether it's the Beyond Burger or the Impossible Burger or any of the other products from companies like Tofurky that have been around for years and years and years that offer replacements for, you know, bacon and sausages and cold cuts and whatever you may want. Majority, 70% of the people who are buying those products are meat eaters. So what's happening now is that people are shifting away. They see that, all right, I may still eat meat or maybe perhaps choose to eat cheese, but increasingly I've got this option in the grocery store that is not only tastes the same, often better in the case of plant-based milks and some of the other products, but is also undoubtedly better for your health because it is devoid of a lot of
cholesterol, saturated fat.
And if you're, depending on where you get your animal protein, the antibiotics and added hormones and the added environmental toll, and of course, not to mention the billions of animals that have to be killed just to produce that. So when you're making the plant-based choice, people are doing it only because they are. You know, here's the silver lining in our information age, is people are learning and they're making those choices even if they are not coming out and proclaiming themselves to be an all-out plant-based eater or all-out vegan. And I think that is a fascinating new trend. And it's happening because people realized that enough people out there, including you and others like us who have been pushing out this message, have probably not realized that while not everyone is going to wake up one day and say, that's it, I don't want to support the system, they are going to make those incremental changes in their diet. And as the demand for these products increase, and as more and more companies start to produce better tasting, more affordable, and more available products in the marketplace, we will slowly start to shift our diet without even realizing it. And that's the fascinating place we find ourselves now. And of course, I don't want to make it all about just what you can find in the grocery store that is sold in packages. A lot of people are also realizing that the healthiest way to eat, and this is across the board, meat eater, vegan, flexitarian, vegetarian, or otherwise, that the healthiest foods are whole plant foods, fruits and vegetables. I don't think you'll find any.
No, all the nutritional science today points to that. We don't know if we need a little bit of animal products in our diet or none at all. That hasn't been confirmed by any clinical studies, but definitely we need to eat a diet that is primarily whole, minimally processed plants if we want quality of life, good health, and longevity.
Yeah, and they all are interconnected. And, you know, back to one of your earlier questions right in the beginning when you asked me about my own diet and journey, I've come to the conclusion, and it's kind of I've been toying around with this idea lately, is how can you come up with some rules for eating that everyone can agree with? Everyone. Whether you are a paleo fanatic or a high carb, low fat, or high fat, low carb, or vegan. And it is simple. It is, let's start with what we all agree on. That, what do you pointed out? Whole food, plant-based, is predominantly whole food, plant-based, is the best choice you can make for your health. Now, some may disagree about grains and some may disagree about seeds and oils and salt and sugar. And we don't need to go down those specific areas, but the main thing is whole food, plant-based. What if you make 80% of your diet whole food, whole plant foods, 80% of your diet, no matter what you eat. And that remaining 10 or 20%, here's where things get really interesting. That remaining 10 or 20%, you can choose to eat animal products, because people are still going to want to eat cheese and butter and bacon and burgers and have sandwiches with bread and put mayo on their sandwiches. You can choose to eat the animal product that is going to make up 10, 20% of your diet with those products. Or you can choose the plant-based options. And I think that's where hopefully more people can start to agree that if we all can start doing that, choose 80% of your diet with whole plant foods, the remaining 20%, try to eat, if you eat packaged foods, keep them to a minimal amount. We all know, I think anyone who understands, has done any research on nutrition and science around health and nutrition, knows that processed oils and excess salt and sugar are not the best things you can add to your diet. So, but you having them in moderation has not been found to cause too many problems. So if you're going to have 20% quote-unquote bad stuff or less good stuff in your diet, make that choice the plant-based one. And if you look at how people eat, that's usually what they do. You go to the grocery store, you're going to go to the produce aisle, fill up 80% of your grocery cart with that, and that remaining 20% to make life more interesting, because a lot of people, unfortunately, don't know what to do with whole plant foods and assume the only thing you can do is...
they have to find their kitchen and cook, which is a big challenge for a lot of people.
Yeah, so think of that 20%, even if it's plant-based, or because I think that's the better option. If you're going to eat 20% and you want to make your meals more interesting, and you want to eat out once in a while, choose the plant-based option. You're going to eat a burger, choose the Beyond Burger. I mean, it is...
you can find it at TGIF now, just about everywhere. It's amazing.
Yeah, and then, you know, of course, and use common sense when you're making your food choices. And hopefully, people can agree that that'll be the best possible... you know, and how you play around with those rules is up to you, but it's kind of guidelines. And then you decide how you want to use them. And that's definitely going to be better for you from a health standpoint. I found that to be life-changing for me. When I started eating this way, when I put whole food plant-based in front of my diet in terms of making it comprise 80% of my diet and having the rest be 20%, instant changes. And I think most people who do that will find that they will feel better, that they will be healthier, that their food will also be more interesting. You don't have to then assume you're going to have to eat salad every day. And of course, in the context of today's conversation, you're going to be making a huge impact on future generations.
Doesn't that feel good? Come on, when we're all so frustrated with politics today, you can really do something that's good for you, good for the family, good for the world. It's all good. And it's not deprivation. It's delicious. I wanted to mention an article that just came out that bugged me in the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
And I read the New York Times. Uh-huh. And, you know, sometimes some of these other papers. But I find that when we get articles about nutrition, there's always like a caveat or a disclaimer. They can't just come all out and say, eat plants, folks. Maybe it's because of their advertisers. I don't know what it is. But this particular article, I don't know if you saw it. I think it's from yesterday. Beans, the superfood you've always known. Did you see this one?
I did.
And it starts out, kale haters rejoice. The latest trend ingredients in snacks and at mealtime are pinto beans, chickpeas, lentils, and peas. Okay. Why does it have to be that way? Now, Dr. Joel Fuhrman, who's my favorite medical doctor, he promotes G-bombs, greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, seeds. And greens and beans are essential in a healthy plant-based diet. And yet, these newspapers where we go to for information can't tell the whole truth. They always have to sensationalize, make it sexy. Beans are the new kale. No, they're not. No, they're not. Beans have been eaten all over the world forever. They're like the most inexpensive and most nutritious food. There's like 45,000 varieties of beans. And yes, we should be eating them. And yeah, we should be eating kale too. It's just bugging me. But beans were a sign of poverty. And I've gotten that a lot. And, you know, people don't want to eat foods that symbolize poverty. Okay, are we? Why do we continue to dumb ourselves down? Beans are a fantastic food filled with resistant starch. They're caloric. The calories that they have in them, we don't even get all of them because they end up going out anyway. They're just a beautiful food. And I was making a list of all the things you can do with beans, okay? Do you know what you can do with beans? Okay, you can put them on salads. You can put them in soups. You can put them in stews. You can make snacks out of them. Make roasted chickpeas, which is a wonderful snack. And you can season them any way you like with different herbs and spices. You can make spreads. Everybody knows about hummus, which is really a chickpea spread. Hummus means chickpea or garbanzo bean in the land of the Middle East. And you can make spreads from all different kinds of beans and add different herbs and spices, okay? Spreads. You can make baked goods from garbanzo bean flour and lentil flour. So many different gluten-free flours make wonderful baked goods, breads and cakes and muffins. We make pancakes with bean flours and waffles. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a great observation about, and I know we've been talking about that, is our the media culture we live in today, which is also so intertwined with our food culture. Meat, it's a more sensational headline. When people don't have attention, you need to grab them. So the best way to do it is celebrate beans and make it cool and attack.
But what they're
kale.
Promoting in this article is actually chips and snack foods with oil and salt made with beans instead of grains.
Yeah, it's because you have to make beans cool. So I suppose you have to put it, pack it with stuff that actually takes away anything good from it.
There's you've been to Beyond Sushi?
I have.
So the big Beyond Sushi is right down the street from here, but I actually like the one on 56th Street better. They have a sweet potato black bean brownie. It's a little mushy, but it's delicious. It's made from black beans and sweet potatoes, okay?
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. You know, I think food marketing is an interesting space. I mean, I think what's also I'm starting to notice is that as plant-based foods become more and more trendy, everyone wants to jump on the bandwagon, and then the more the merrier,
that's
of
great.
Course. It's
of
great.
Course.
It is great. We're seeing more investment flowing to companies that are manufacturing all kinds of non-dairy beverages, cheeses.
Sure.
Of
if
course,
you want to eat
the meat
junk
companies.
Food, I'm all for it if it doesn't require cruelty to animals and devastation to the environment, right?
Yeah. I mean, also, but I will add to that, though, a lot of companies are working harder to make their products better because consumers are demanding more. So you're finding even in the non-dairy or the dairy-free creamer or plant-based milk category, for example, in the beginning it was all plant-based milks were created equal. And you're starting to see that the ones that are taking out most of the additives and the emulsifiers and the coloring agents and the flavors are the ones that are actually selling more because people, when they make a plant-based choice, don't want to then find out that they're eating or they're consuming something that now has some other problematic chemical in it or some sort of ingredient that's going to now cause other health problems for them. Right. And I think there's a lot of confusion there, too. I mean, I tried to unpack that recently with a dietitian, and it's complicated. Yeah. Just because something is has a chemical-sounding name doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. But you won't see the Wall Street Journal necessarily writing about that because it's less exciting. Although I would tell them that if you come up with a great headline, you could actually be communicating the truth about food without dumbing it down. And there's ways to do that. You just have to have the courage to tell the truth
and
be consistent.
Yes, courage. Thank you. My background's in chemical engineering. I know all about chemicals, and there are good chemicals and there are bad chemicals, and we're made of chemicals. We only have a few minutes left, and I just wanted to share a recipe that I just made like 2 days ago. It's cracked to me. So I made an almond ricotta, and it's the simplest thing, three ingredients, soaked almonds, chickpea miso, and water. And oh my God, it's gone already. I made a whole big jar, and it's gone. It's amazing, and please visit responsibilityandliving.com and check out this recipe and make it and eat it because it's good. And all your dairy friends, give it to them. Make them try it. They'll like it. So we're wrapping this up. And congratulations for launching Eat for the Planet, Saving the World One Bite at a Time, Neil Zacharias, co-authored with my friend Gene Stone. And I really would like, I would like this to make the difference, okay? I've read a lot of books over the last 30, 45 years or so about this subject, and may this be the one.
Yeah, I hope so. And I that's why I think it's important to talk to people who disagree with us. And I know I'm circling back to the first point you brought up, which is the political environment that we live in and the tribal nature of most of our interactions with people online. We only want to talk to people who agree with us and avoid everyone else.
No, no, no. I like to talk to those who don't agree with me.
And yeah, I think that's we need more of that.
I wanted to say earlier, when people stop me on the street, like from Sierra Club or something, and they want to promote something environmental, the first thing I say is, are you vegan? What are you eating? And they're like, oh, no, yeah. Okay, well, get back to me.
Yeah, unfortunately, the people in the street are the ones who are just like, I don't know, I'm just getting paid by the hour to do this.
Exactly,
I don't
right.
know anything. So, you know, yeah, we need more of those that conversation. We need to be sharing ideas. We need to be looking past our little echo chambers and realize that there's a lot we can actually agree on. And yes, there are some things we will always disagree on. And there's time and place to debate on that. But here, when we're facing this existential crisis as a planet, as a race of as humans on this planet, we need to come together and agree to make changes in the way we eat. And most importantly, hopefully that'll lead to changes in how our government chooses to use your tax dollars and shift some of those subsidies, 38 billion of them, I think, that go to meat and dairy right now, and put some of that towards encouraging plant proteins and plant-based foods.
Okay, let's wrap it up. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. Remember, hashtag Eat for the Planet. Neil Zacharias, thank you for joining me. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.